The following talk is offered freely to ensure that no one is ever denied access to these practices and to these teachings. If you feel inspired to make a donation to support this offering, you can go to my website at jonathanfaust.com. While you're there, you can also sign up for a monthly newsletter designed to support you in your practice. Thank you and enjoy.
So I recently got an iPad Pro. You know, the one with the 12X Bionic chip with a 64-bit architecture? That one. And I debated. I didn't buy it right away. But I was, you know, bouncing back and forth. And, of course, there's a very interesting, you know, theory about the structure of the brain, that there are these modules that kind of take over. You know, there's the I want that module, you know, and then there's the, you know, I really need that module. So they kind of played themselves out for quite a while. But I finally went for it, but a voice inside me said, well, this isn't going to make you happy, you know, but I went ahead and got it. And you know what? It really has. So I'm here to tell you that there are some Apple products that will make you happy. So it's an interesting thing. Happiness is such a fascinating topic because we all want it. There's no one that doesn't want to be happy. And it becomes a really interesting question. How do you be happy? You know, is happiness an arduous process that you work on by slowly unpeeling the onion of your conditioning? I think on the most radical level, no. Here's the punchline of the whole talk. The talk is entitled The Quickest Way to Be Happy. This is with a hat tip to Werner Erhard, who created EST, if you're familiar with EST. So the quickest way to be happy? Choose what you already have. Thank you for coming tonight. There are no cookies, but if you have any chewing gum, we can share it around. So I'd like to talk about the keys to happiness in the moment, but also the importance of identifying what's between you and being happy, bringing that into more refined awareness. And how ultimately the experience of happiness is directly linked to your true nature, to who and what you truly are. And then finally, hopefully if we have time, just an interesting model that can help you do an assessment of your happiness level and how you might work it. So as I've mentioned many times before, I was a Peace Corps volunteer in Niger in West Africa. And at one point, I did a big photography project because it was 20 years that Peace Corps had been in the country. So I got to travel around a lot doing this documentary. And so I went to a number of remote villages. I mean, and Niger is mostly in the Sahel. So there's the Sahara, but the Sahel is basically a wasteland. It's like a 90-day growing season. It's a lot of rocks and some dirt. I was 21 years old with a really completely conditioned Western mind. And I was stunned being in these villages. According to my Western standards, these people were supposed to be miserable. But they were really happy. Not everyone. But people seemed genuinely happy. And I was stunned. But the more I would travel, I think there are more happy people here than there are back home. How can that be? They had very little by way of possessions, but they had a sense of connection. There was a sense of belonging. Everyone knew their name. They're part of this small little unit, this small little connection. And I don't want to paint it as this ideal picture. In Niger, the second highest infant mortality rate in the world and extreme conditions. But despite that, there was just kind of a joie de vivre. And it brings up this really interesting question, you know, is happiness dependent on externals? And is it possible to cultivate happiness regardless of what's going on outside of you? Maybe you've seen that classic situation where you give a child a really cool gift and they spend the whole afternoon playing with the box. You know, it's just that innocence, you know. Here's this really, really cool box. There's no story, there's no comparing, there's no judging, there's no trying to figure it out. There's just sort of play with what is. And it's possible to tap into that. But you have to let go. You have to let go of the comparing, judging, thinking, planning mind. You may know the book Beginner's Mind by Shunryo Suzuki, where he talks about cultivating beginner's mind, where everything is new for the first time. He said quite famously, in the expert's mind, there are very few possibilities. In beginner's mind, there are infinite possibilities. So how do we cultivate that in our meditation practice? But also, how do you cultivate it in your life where you can actually experience each moment fresh? I noticed back in West Africa that people tend to be a little happier in the country, like really, really out where they were more isolated. In the city, there was tremendous suffering, and it was kind of the... in many ways, more pronounced, because it's sort of like the Western infection of more, you know. So I just noticed with many of the people that I met and kind of hung out, you know, that if you didn't have a bike, you wanted a bike. And if you had a bike, then you wanted a moped. If you had a moped, then you wanted a motorcycle. And if you wanted a motorcycle, you wanted a bigger one. If you had that, then you wanted a car. It's the whole experience we all have of wanting more. And if we're caught in the wanting more, life is never satisfying. It's described as the hungry ghost in the Buddhist literature, and you see these sketches of these beings with small little mouths and really, really long necks and really big bellies. And they're consuming and consuming and consuming, but they can't get enough to get full inside. And we're all afflicted with that to some degree. And it all comes down to desire. And when you look at desire and happiness, they're kind of diametrically opposite. When you are happy, there's no desire. And therefore, it's possible to be happy anywhere, anytime, if it's possible to let go of desire. And this becomes an integral part in our meditation practice, because you get to see that creeping, wandering, wanting mind. Of course, when you begin to cultivate non-judging awareness, you begin to be more aware of what's wholesome, and you also become aware of what's not wholesome. You become more aware of what's between you and feeling happy. It reminded me once in a spiritual friends group. If you're not familiar with spiritual friends groups, they're usually groups of maybe 8 to 10. And you get together once or twice a month and you meditate. And then there's kind of a timed sharing where you just sort of talk about what's happening in your life and how you're kind of applying mindfulness to it. It's a wonderful, wonderful way of connecting. In the Year of Living Mindfully program, I was just joining one of the groups. And as we were going around, and it was a pretty intense year for me. And I remember sharing... just sort of hearing myself share, and I said, you know, in the last 2 years, 3 dogs have died. Tara's mother is really in hospice now. My father's Alzheimer's is now full-blown. Tara's had a real health flare-up. But I'm really okay. Do you ever notice that in your life? Where this all this spinning stuff, all this stuff going on, but somehow in the middle you're really kind of okay. It's a fascinating thing. We do a process in the Year of Living Mindfully from the modality of focusing in Eugene Genlin called clearing the space, where you ask yourself, well, what's between me and feeling happy? And then you just sort of name one thing and you kind of say hello to it. There you are. Then you imagine you just place the concern for it to the side. And then you ask again. It's a very interesting way of just helping you sort of name and recognize the landscape of what's between you and feeling happy. So I thought we might take a few minutes for that, if you don't mind. You can close your eyes. We'll do just a few rounds. When you just bring your attention to your breath, and when you just consider everything in your life that's changing right now, what's falling away, what's calling you forward. If you can just name one thing, one issue that's between you and feeling really happy, what would that be? You just name it. And then imagine you could just say hello to it. Kind of let it know you see it. There you are. Now imagine you could place the concern for that to the side. Not that the issue goes away, but your concern, you're just putting it to the periphery. And then again, what's between you and feeling happy? Can you name this? Say hello to this. Placing the concern to the side. And then again, what's between you and feeling happy? And as you name it, take some time to say hello to it. I see you. And imagine you could place the concern for that to the side. And then one more time, what's between you and feeling happy? And saying hello to this. And placing the concern to the side. And you might just take a moment just to kind of say hello to what you've named. Just some of the issues in your life. And sensing in your own way who you are as the one who is aware. And then when you're ready, you can deepen your breath and you can open your eyes. Sometimes when I've guided people through that, you know, they'll say, wow, other than these 15 things, I'm starting to feel pretty happy. But there is something about just the naming of it that can be very, very helpful. There's sometimes, you know, how when you wake up in the morning and there's that low-grade anxiety, you know, just kind of low-grade fever. I'll just sort of ask, well, I'll do a few rounds. Okay, so what's between me and feeling happy right now? Like, oh yeah, I've got to write that thing. Oh, I got to call that person. And just the naming of it, there's kind of a settling that can be very helpful. So sometimes you can be in the middle of a hurricane, of just a vortex of stuff, and you can sort of stay the objective observer where you're kind of untouched. But quite often, of course, that's not the case. you get swept up in unfolding drama, and you get caught up in the winds of wanting and not wanting and confusion. And the whole world turns on that drama. The whole world thrives on that conflict. Look at the headlines out there. You know, they're just designed to make you nervous, you know. Is this the beginning of the end for Trump? Democrats will get crushed in the next election unless they do these two things. Is ISIS just getting started? What you don't know about dying a horrible death from your next mosquito bite. I mean, crazy. But we're so manipulated by these forces. Not just internally, but of course externally. They're designed to either develop greed, the wanting, where we go to find something to make us buy something to feel happier, or they're designed on hatred. If you think like us, you'll be part of our tribe, not those bad people. Or they're designed to make you confused. They're designed to make you believe things that really aren't true, or to not believe things that are. So if desire is really at the root of this, how do we work with it? Particularly in an age where we're bombarded with forces that are designed to stimulate the fear, the amygdala. They're designed to stimulate greed and hatred and delusion. It's so interesting, and I think many of us know this phrase, but it's so interesting how the Buddha allegedly said this 2,500 years ago, before internet. He said that when you want to really be happy, like truly, truly happy, you will be swimming upstream. You're swimming against your own conditioning. But he also said you're swimming against the culture. And if that was true 2,500 years ago, it is more true than ever now. That you are swimming upstream in order to cultivate that experience of non-judging awareness. To be able to tap into the true happiness. A happiness that's not dependent on externals. To truly have that experience of dropping desire so that you can rest in the moment. What a rare thing. A rare thing. And so when we get that sense that it's possible to cultivate happiness regardless of the externals, it calls us to practice. It's just a question of practice and considering the rest of the culture is going that way and you want to go that way, it's also helpful to find like-minded people who are also interested in going that way. It's a real important part of the practice. So there's a story told of a famous nun who was dying in her monastery. And quite in this monastery, they put a big emphasis on your last words. You know, some traditions, they really emphasize that. What was the last thing they said before they died? So her last words, if someone is saying, is there anything you need? Her last words are, thank you. I have no complaints. What a great way to go out, isn't that? If you've had the experience and really the opportunity to be with those who are in the process of dying. You know, for some people, it's horrendous. You know, there's a lot of pain, there's a lot of fear. But for others, it's an amazing journey because the world, as they know it, starts to fall away. They're more present. There's less and less intrusion. Certainly, there are regrets, but as those regrets get processed and released, it becomes really an experience of gratitude. Just one more breath, you know, one more day. And there is that sense of the struggle of life starts to fall away and presence starts to emerge. So the magic of just being present, the magic of being alive. And so it becomes a very interesting inquiry. What does it mean to be without desire? So why don't we take a few minutes to explore this in a short meditation? Again, when you draw your attention to your breath, just notice how it may draw your awareness inside. And you'll notice how there is a natural movement of the mind. The mind, in many ways, it's kind of like a butterfly. It'll move from a sensation to a thought, to a story, back to a sensation, to a feeling. And you might just sense, in this next minute, if there is no desire to add anything or take anything away from right now. What is your experience right now that there is nothing to add and nothing to take away? And gently deepening the breath. If you like, you can remain with your eyes closed. So choosing what you already have, it's truly a profound practice. It's saying yes to what's right here. Nothing off stage. Choosing what you have doesn't mean complacency. It doesn't mean you don't act toward injustice and so forth. But it comes from a different place. This word mindfulness is such a screwy little word. I always prefer the word non-judging awareness. But that quality of awareness, it's not for or against anything. It's not denying anything. It's not indulging anything. It's that noticing faculty. One of my favorite readings, and you might like to close your eyes again. This is from the third Zen patriarch, Tenzin Ming. And it just points toward kind of a different state of consciousness. The great way is not difficult for those who have no preferences. When love and hate are both absent, everything becomes clear and undisguised. Make the slightest distinction, however, and heaven and earth are set infinitely apart. If you wish to see the truth, then hold no opinions for or against anything. To set up what you like against what you dislike is the disease of the mind. The way is perfect like vast space. where nothing is lacking and nothing is in excess. So again, deepening the breath, if you like, you can open your eyes. The treatise from the Third Zen Patriarch is one of my favorite readings. It's quite long, but it's a real transmission because it points toward what it means to really be happy. That very deep abiding in presence. And it points toward the true self, the unconditioned self, which we can actually get glimpses of from time to time. So I'd like to share with you an interesting model. It's more of like a pragmatic, down-to-earth model for looking at happiness. I was sitting with someone who was going through a rough time. We did a bit of an inquiry, you know, what's between you and feeling happy. And there were a number of issues for her. She was feeling a little depressed. She noticed that because of her depression, she was withdrawing a little bit from the world, feeling out of sorts in her relationships, and she wasn't sure what her life was all about anymore. And so kind of a downward spiral. So positive psychology is a fascinating thing. If you haven't looked at it, there's some really, really good stuff in there. And they actually, I'd like to share with you a couple of the questions from their questionnaire. And we did sort of an informal review with this person. I'll share about that in a few moments. So if you like, you can close your eyes again. And there are quite a few questions here. But just notice your immediate response to these questions. And these are really pretty scientifically honed questions to give you a sense of your happiness level. How often do you share feelings with friends or relatives? How often do you do kind things for others? How much time do you spend on social media each day? How often do you do at least 20 minutes of physical exercise? How well do you know your strengths and use them creatively? How much do you find fulfillment in your life by using your strengths and skills toward a greater purpose bigger than yourself? How much do you engage into activities you find challenging and absorbing? How much do you feel gratitude toward people and events from your past? How much are you able to focus on the present moment and not get distracted by future or past thoughts? How optimistic are you? How much do you participate in a spiritual community or group? How much do you feel your life is meaningful and has purpose? So if you like, you can open your eyes. There's been a lot of study on the psychology of happiness. Like, what are the factors that really make up a happy life? And it's amazing to see the research that's been done. So Martin Seligman wrote the book Positive Psychology many, many years ago. Then he updated it and changed a little bit. So you can think of this in terms of what's called PERMA, P-E-R-M-A. The first is feeling positive emotions, just feeling good. How much do you feel good? The second is engagement. How much do you feel absorbed in activities in your life? The third is relationships. How much do you feel authentically connected with other people around you? The fourth is meaning. How much do you feel like you have a purposeful existence? And the fifth is achievement. How much do you have a sense of accomplishment and success? So it's a very interesting way to really do a little review of your life. And you may sense, wow, I'm a little bit low over here. And it's sort of all part of like building that upward spiral. You know, the vicious circle, which is kind of like, if you've ever seen Theater of the Absurd, it just goes round and round and round. And you can break the vicious circle with mindfulness, just being a little bit aware. And instead of the circle, it becomes an upward spiral. So it becomes kind of a virtuous spiral. And just by noting what's between you and feeling free, feeling happy, and reflecting on these qualities of how much do you feel positive emotion? How engaged are you in your life? Are your relationships deep and authentic? Does your life have meaning? And do you have a sense of accomplishment? Very, very powerful questions. And by recognizing what might need adjustment, you can really explore how you might explore that more and develop a more wholesome sense of your life. And so with this woman, we kind of went through that, and she realized that there were a number of steps she could take that would kind of help to break that cycle. So there's a little bit of a paradox here. On the one hand, you can be happy by choosing what you already have. So that's sort of like instant happiness, or at least getting a glimpse of happiness. You can get a glimpse of happiness by really exploring who you are in the absence of desire. And again, they can just give you that sense of that deep, deep sense of contentment. And you can also look at your life from this sort of holistic perspective. Like, are there actually things you can do that would shift your life in some way? It kind of comes down to, you can say, these two essential paths. One is sort of the path of self-improvement, and the other is sort of the path of liberation. Sort of the path of liberation is sort of like drop desire and you're home. But we're still living in this relational world. And there's some really beautiful teachings around cultivating more wholesome states. That whatever you engage into in your life, in any kind of practice, anything you do, is to really assess, did this cultivate a more wholesome state or a less wholesome state? And more I'm seeing meditation and living through this lens of mindfulness as a process of self-diagnosis. Just as at the end of that meditation, you can ask yourself, how does this moment want me to be with it? Would I benefit from gathering my attention and concentrating and arriving and landing? Would I benefit more from taking the seat of the observer and just watching what changes? Or would I benefit from just simply letting it all fall away and just being that awareness? In that same way, you can kind of self-diagnose your life by sincerely inquiring, so what is between me and feeling happy? How does that want me to be with it? Is there something that needs to change? Something that doesn't need to change? And when you explore those changes, to really inquire, is this up-leveling my sense of presence? So some thoughts on happiness. Why don't we'll close with a short meditation, and I'll share a few more lines from the third Zen patriarch. Again, with the eyes closed, you can relax your breath. And just sensing this possibility that you can cultivate happiness independent of the externals in your life. By sensing who you are right now in the absence of desire and actively choosing what you have, saying yes to what is here. To live in presence is neither easy nor difficult. But those with limited views are fearful and irresolute. The faster they hurry, the slower they go. And clinging cannot be limited. Even to be attached to the idea of enlightenment is to go astray. Just let things be in their own way, and there will be neither coming nor going. Obey your own true nature, and you will walk freely and undisturbed. When thoughts are in bondage, the truth is hidden, for everything is murky and unclear. And the burdensome practice of judging brings annoyance and weariness. If you wish to move in the one way, do not dislike even the world of senses and ideas. To accept them fully is identical with true enlightenment. And together, let's draw in a long, deep breath and exhale with a sigh. And inhale fully, exhale with a hum. And together, let's share the sound of Om. Again, inhaling. Om. And one final time. Feel the lingering effect of the sound. And when you're ready, you can open your eyes. Thank you again for coming out tonight. How'd you like those ohms? It's kind of a, after my decades of living in an ashram, I got seriously ohmed out. Om before meals, Om before and after meetings. It was just one long Om.